Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. At midnight last night, the Utah legislature wrapped up its 45 days of lawmaking and finished the 2012 legislative session. There were several message bills, state lawmakers telling the federal government to get off the state's back. Some of those were controversial, and warnings from legislative lawyers that it's going to cost the state some money, perhaps. Also, some increases for teachers and for state employees. And a couple of controversial bills have petitions going around urging Governor Herbert to veto those bills. Let's deal with sex education and photography and sound recording on agricultural operations. That and much more to be discussed in this hour as we do our traditional wrap-up program following the legislature. And we'll have with us Royce Van Tassel with Utah Taxpayers Association, Democratic Representative David Litvak. We'll talk with Judy Hillman from Utah Health Policy Project, Republican Senator Pete Knudsen, Democratic Senator Ross Romero, and Glenn Bailey with Crossroads Urban Center. And we would love to have your comments as well at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. We begin with this wrap-up piece reporting on the bills that passed, the bills that didn't, from KCPW's Jessica Gale.
At the stroke of midnight, Utah's 2012 legislative session came to a close.
This session has been busy but boring.
That's how Senate Minority Leader Ross Romero sums up a session that was filled with new policy but relatively little controversy compared to last year. The session began with more money to spend than has been available in the past 4 years. And with that came a promise from both parties to make education a top priority.
I'd like to give him a good solid A-.
That's the grade State Superintendent Larry Shumway gives legislators this year for their work on education, saying they paid attention to what the state board needed most.
They have done a very good job on funding the state board's priorities. They've funded 13 out of 15 of the priorities. 98% of our budget, original budget request.
While there was enough money in the budget to fully fund new student growth and raise the weighted pupil unit, which could translate into a 1% raise for teachers, some things like increasing the funding for the state's most expensive special education students, as well as services for some at-risk students, were not met. The Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control and how to restructure it is another issue lawmakers were committed to looking at this session.
We've now made a major step in the ability to have oversight, not only the auditor that we're going to place in-house that works and reports to the board. We've reorganized the board.
House Majority Leader Brad Dee says although lawmakers were ready to tackle reorganizing the DABC, the issue of more alcohol licenses was one they opted to put on hold until a later time. And time is one thing lawmakers wanted to make sure the federal government understood this legislative session. House Speaker Becky Lockhart notes several bills and resolutions were passed, urging Washington to give up Utah's public land or be prepared for a lawsuit.
We've worked on legislation that isn't just about, hey, federal government, knock it off. It's we're going to take action now. We are going to claim the lands. We are going to, I guess you could say, see you in court.
And that court battle is something Democrats cited when opposing those bills, saying they will needlessly cost taxpayers a lot of money. Perhaps the most controversial bill of 2012 was House Bill 363, a bill sponsored by Representative Bill Wright of Holden, which only allows Utah schools to teach abstinence-only sex education, or simply not teach it at all.
We have Planned Parenthood curriculum that have moved in and was in service for our teachers that was being taught in our schools. Planned Parenthood is a national organization that's not maybe consistent with our values, and we just feel that's inappropriate.
The bill has drawn sharp criticism from Democrats like Representative Marie Polson from Cottonwood Heights, who say the bill was rushed through the Senate with no chance for debate and now hurts both parents and teens.
I think as we end the legislative session, some of the big losers are the teenagers in our state and the parents who don't have the opportunity of choice on how their students should be educated as to do with health and sex education. House Bill 363 supersedes parents, the voices of parents.
A less controversial bill was Senator Kurt Bramble's push to tweak the state's Government Records Access and Management Act, or GRAMA, something that drew a huge outcry last year.
We took the harshest critics from last year, were willing to sit at the table and reason together and come up with a bill that everybody believed was appropriate. And it passed unanimous all the way through.
Senate Bill 177 creates a state records ombudsman and requires records officers to receive training. Lawmakers passed over 300 bills over the last 6 weeks. Some of those include expanding the state's abortion waiting period time from 24 to 72 hours and the creation of a new pilot program for young children with autism spectrum disorders. The session ended with several goodbyes. Senate President Michael Wadups, along with House and Senate Minority Leaders David Litvak and Ross Romero, are not seeking re-election, nor is Senate Minority Whip Karen Morgan. Republican Representative John Dugal also announced his resignation last night after serving 10 years in the legislature. From KCPW News in Salt Lake City, I'm Jessica Gale for Utah Public Radio.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of History, committed to providing the knowledge necessary for informed decision-making by citizens of Utah, the United States, and the world, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah Legislature. Online at usu.edu/history. Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. It's our traditional legislative wrap-up program. We're going to be joined by Representatives David Litvak, Senators Pete Knudsen, Ross Romero, and Scott Jenkins. We'll also be talking with Judy Hillman from Utah Health Policy Project and Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center. And we open the program with Royce Van Tassel from Utah Taxpayers Association. Mr. Van Tassel, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be with you and talking with your listeners. How are you, Tom?
Oh, doing well, doing well. Well, a busy 45 days, I'm sure, for your organization, and we talked with you briefly at the beginning of the session. I'd like to get pros and cons. What do you think good happened at the legislature this session?
Well, I think we've seen some tremendous strides. One of the most important is a very strong statement by the legislature that the state should get out of the business of golf. You may recall last year there was an audit from the legislative auditor general noting that state taxpayers are subsidizing golf around the state to the tune of some $3 or $4 million. In some cases, $63 for a single round of golf, and that was just the subsidy. And the legislature has said very clearly, and the state is moving forward with saying, you know what, this isn't something we should be subsidizing. The private sector is more than happy to do that. And so they're going to turn over the operation and management of the state's four golf courses to the private sector. And that's a big win for taxpayers here in Utah.
Yeah, I recall talking to you some 45 days ago. I was concerned of yours that also Glenn Bailey, Crossroads Urban Center, mentioned that as well. So two organizations there, be pleased. The budget is balanced, as it always is in Utah, and some of the debt was paid down. I'm guessing that you're pleased with that.
Well, they were able to pay down quite a bit of debt. They were able to put another $11 million back into the state's rainy day fund. We didn't see any statewide tax increases. I think the legislature did a very good job handling the budget, and the Taxpayers Association is pleased with the way that worked out.
What would you have liked to have seen happen that didn't, or perhaps the bills that were harmful, you thought?
Well, there was one bill in particular that we were concerned with. HB 81 passed. There was a sales tax that is currently imposed in two cities, South Salt Lake and Riverdale. And that tax was scheduled to go away, to sunset, in 2016. And folks in those in South Salt Lake specifically were anxious to keep that so that they could bond against it for another 15 years. And so they decided we're going to extend that tax until the year 2030. It really was the only tax increase that the legislature approved, something that the Taxpayers Association fought hard against. But in the end, the will of the body was to help out South Salt Lake with that bonding.
Does the Taxpayers Association take any position at all on potential financial effects of some of the so-called message bills? Some of these are going to be litigated. That's potential taxpayers' money, from the point of view of some, going down the hole.
You know, there's a lot of question about what should happen with the federal lands. It's frequently noted that Utah spends less per child than any other state in the nation, and that really happens for two reasons. One, we have more children by far than any other state in the nation. And when you combine that with having two-thirds of the state's landmass owned by the federal government and thus not subject to tax, it becomes very, very difficult to fund the kind of education system that Utah's children really should have. While it's true that more money doesn't necessarily mean a better education, having all of that land locked away, not subject to tax, means that the rest of us have to pay higher taxes. And so I think that the legislature has been looking at this for a very long time, trying to figure out how can we get some of those federal lands unlocked, how can we provide access for multiple uses, not just for people who, like me, like to ski in the backcountry, but so that there are opportunities to mountain bike, to harvest the natural resources that are out there. And the legislature is rightly looking and saying, what are the options that are available? And I think all taxpayers should hope that we are able to lower taxes as access to those federal lands becomes available.
So you see this as a net positive, then, this movement?
You know, we've got to find some way. For longer than I've been at the watching Utah politics, this has been an important issue, and hopefully something shakes loose.
Very good. Royce Van Tassel with Utah Taxpayers Association. We checked in with him at the beginning of this session, and at the end here, I'm sure we'll check back in with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Appreciate Royce Van Tassel joining us. Coming up, we'll check back in with another couple of people that we talked with at the beginning of the session to see how they thought the session went. Judy Hillman, coming up in about 20 minutes with Utah Health Policy Project. And at the end of the program, we'll talk with Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center. Right now, we are pleased to bring in Representative David Litvak. Representative, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
And we're going to be joined shortly by Senator Scott Jenkins, Republican Senator Scott Jenkins. David Litvak is a Democrat. First of all, Representative, you've announced you're retiring from the legislature?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm not seeking re-election.
Is this an effective redistricting? You didn't want to run against a fellow?
No, this is something that I've been contemplating for the last year. Hard decision, took a lot of thought and discussion with my wife to come to this decision. Has nothing to do with redistricting or not absolutely loving being up there, because I do. 12 years is a long time, and felt like time to reprioritize family. And look for new opportunities to serve the community. And so I'll complete my term, my current term.
Okay. Well, we'll enjoy talking to you at this point. Republican Senator Scott Jenkins now joins us. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Glad to be here.
We appreciate our legislators joining us the day after the session. I know it's a long session and a long day, the last day. Let me start with Representative Litvak. Your colleague, I believe it was Senator Romero, described it as this session is boring, is the word he used. Boring and productive, I think.
Well, I think it was, I used to say the Salt Lake Tribune, but I was correct. I think it was the Deseret News that had a headline or about midpoint in the session, boring but busy. And I like to joke that that's a great headline from the Democrat perspective because, you know, it maybe means that there's less controversial bills and things like that. But I think really what for me, how I would characterize this session is really productive. Sometimes when members of our body on both sides of the aisle bring forward really controversial bills, things like that, I think Sometimes that distracts us from doing, you know, the really important work on behalf of the citizens of the state of Utah. And I think this year was a very productive session, and I think all of us were really focused on the key issues, education, the budget, and that's where we spent most of the time, and I think that's a good thing.
What were the good things then, the top couple of things that you could point to the legislature accomplished this time around?
Well, I think the funding for education is the top. Being able to fully fund enrollment growth for the first time in years, add to the weighted pupil unit the way we did. We all recognize, Democrat and Republican, that we have more work to do when it comes to funding education. But that's a long path, not a short term. But I think we made very significant steps there. That is definitely the top thing I think we did this year.
We turn to Senator Jenkins. How would you characterize this session?
Oh, I think Representative Litvak hit it right on. We funded some areas we haven't been able to fund for years. I'm really excited. You know, a lot of people poo-poo this and don't think much of it, but when you start thinking about the depth of what we did, we spent close to $500 million in new money. Well, we haven't seen that kind of growth in years. And to be able to fund the WPU and give some raises and do just a little bit, you know, you think $500 million is a lot of new money, but boy, when you spread it over a state with the responsibilities we have, it doesn't go very far, does it, David?
It doesn't go very far at all. I mean, I think we all knew coming into the session that, you know, there were more needs in the community, very legitimate needs in the community, that than what revenue we had, and I think it's safe to say that sometimes having new money makes some of those choices even more difficult. When we have gone through these past several years, the recession, Democrat and Republican together really kind of bunkered down and made difficult choices together as an entire body. When you have this new revenue, you start seeing where those needs have accumulated, and a lot of people kind of really making their case as they should, and makes, you know, I don't want to say makes it harder, because having to make cuts, I don't think there's anything harder than that, but it's not as easy as it would seem.
That's absolutely the truth. In fact, you know, sometimes these programs come up here and they're looking for new money, and you say to yourself, you want to fund these and you want to help these people. These new programs cry out for help. But then you look at it and you say to yourself, okay, so these are new programs and we're funding with new dollars. And you have to stop yourself and say, now hold on, everybody can't be funded. We can't just to continue to grow government. So David's right. It is really hard to make those decisions.
Let me start with this one, question with Senator Jenkins. There's been a lot of press regarding what some regard as the message bills. Others would characterize them as a needed protest against a federal intrusion into state sovereignty. With federal lands bills, a Utah compact on health care, or a health care compact on health care, and protests against Common Core curriculum among those bills. Senator Jenkins, is this a needed protest, or is this a potentially expensive diversion?
Oh, we believe on the Republican side that these protests, these message bills, are quite important. First of all, the people we send them to, our delegation back in Washington, they encourage us to keep it going. They say that it helps them in their cause to keep the federal government under control. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when you start looking at how we fund public education and the shortfall we have and the effort we have to go through to do it, and you look at where the taxes come from our lands to, in fact, pay for that, and then you start looking at the property back east, and there's almost no federally owned property back there. None. So they have almost 100% of their property tax. Where you get looking at our property, we have almost, 76% of it that doesn't get taxed. So it really puts us at a disadvantage and costs us a fair amount more.
Representative Litvak, what's your view?
Well, I appreciate the passion that the majority party has on this issue. I have to say that, because I don't want you know, the Democratic Party's opposition to some of these bills to reflect poorly on. We recognize that this is an important issue to our colleagues, and our concern is that on some of these land bills, the legal strategy behind that is very questionable. I think, obviously, again, we find common ground that we want to be able to fund education better, that we want to have good partnerships in terms of how we manage our lands. We all want that. The question is, how do we get there? I was, quoted in the paper earlier in the session when Representative Bishop spoke to us that I appreciate his style, the way that he talks about these issues, the way that he tries to bring different sides on these issues together and go over them. We worry that the legal strategy behind it is, quote unquote, legal fiction, that we don't really stand much of a chance making the legal case that the legislature is trying to make. And that's where we worry about protracted costs and things like that.
You know, I agree with what Representative Litvak says there. Our odds are prevailing on some of these issues is very low. But our hope is that if we get enough states in the West, especially, to rally behind this, that the states can exert pressure on the feds to do some of these things. So David's point's well taken.
I guess some would argue, is that message worth potentially high costs in litigation?
Well, we on the Republican side, we believe it is. We view this as really not a partisan issue. This hasn't got anything to do with Republican or Democrat. This has everything to do with state sovereignty, the state's rights, and how we collect our money to finance education. And that's the issue. And like I say, we send these resolutions around to the different states and to our federal delegation, to the president, and we see ground being gained. Now, it's incrementally. I agree. It's not real fast. But you got to fight the fight. Mm-hmm.
If you just joined us, we're doing our legislative wrap-up program, which we do the day after the legislature closes every year. And we appreciate legislators being with us, even though the session closed at midnight last night. Representative David Litvak is with us, a Democrat from Salt Lake City area, and Republican Senator Scott Jenkins. Soon we'll be talking with Judy Hillman, Utah Health Policy Project. At the end of the program, Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center. And in the second half of the program, Senator Pete Knudsen and Senator Ross Romero will be joining us. You're welcome to join us. We'd love to have your questions and comments at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. That's a toll-free number, 1-800-826-1495. Or you can email us at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com, and we'll get that right on for you. Representative Litvak, you've said that you felt the legislature did well by education. I wonder if there are other initiatives in the Best Schools Initiative put forward by the Democrats that you wish would have passed.
Well, first let me tell you that we two very significant successes with our Best School Initiatives. Senator Karen Main with the paraeducator program that will entitle one schools, struggling schools, the legislature will be funding those schools to have a paraeducator that will focus on helping children read. That is critical. That was a critical success. The other one, Representative Carol Moss, who passed and the legislature funded a pilot program for teacher mentorship, a program that has had great success in other states, which is really critical to make sure that our students get what they deserve, which is a high-quality teacher. And as young teachers come in, the ability to have a good mentoring program is critical. And so two great successes. I think maybe, one of the biggest disappointment and a failure on the House side was the lack of passage of Senator Karen Morgan's class size reduction bill. That really what it did was take current money that we're already giving for class size reduction and shift it to what we think is the most critical time in a child's education, kindergarten through third grade. That we would focus those resources on making sure that there were some limits in terms of how big those class sizes can go. That is probably one of the biggest disappointments in terms of the Best Schools Initiative. We still think that's really important, and Senator Morgan, also announced her retirement or intent not to run again, but I would imagine that the work that she's been doing over the many years around education and particularly class size reduction will continue.
Senator Jenkins, there were some good things, as you've both mentioned, with education. New students were funded, and there was a raise for teachers, a raise in, for that matter, for state employees that hadn't happened for quite some time. Dealing with K through 12 education, are there things as you look forward to next session that remain undone?
Well, there's always things left undone. You never get to a point where they're all through. In fact, sometimes you get a little wore out by the fact that it's a constant barrage that you're fighting down there of everybody needs more money, more money, more money. And so we struggle with that. It's really hard. But, you know, the wins that I take out of this session are, we balance our budget every year. And so we balance our budget. We don't go into debt. We went out of our way. We had authorized some bonding on roads to finish some projects. And as property values have dropped the last couple of years, our 85% constitutional debt limit had come into question. So we were able to restructure some of the ways we're bonding, and we were able to stay underneath that 85% limit. And considering that we just did a billion-dollar project down in Utah County on I-15, we're really excited about that we were able to be fiscally conservative here, pull back a little bonding, create a new way to finance some of this, and stay underneath that 85% level. That was a major undertaking, that, once again, shows why Utah is the best fiscally managed state in the nation.
Couple bills, maybe start with Senator Jenkins on this one. A couple of bills were controversial enough that there are petition drives urging the governor to veto them. One is the sex education bill. The other is the filming of agricultural operations bill. And specifically with the sex education bill, Senator Jenkins, did you support that one? Do you, I guess, encourage
people? Yes, I did. The sex education bill, it is a little controversial. Everybody says, well, what districts were having problems out there? And we didn't really have any problems as we looked around. We didn't find any districts that were teaching things that we shouldn't be taught. But we did find some websites, Planned Parenthood, that was that had state endorsement of programs on there. And we felt like it was inappropriate for those to be on there. So that, in my mind, is a lot to do about nothing. We believe that parents should have control of the education of their children, especially when it comes to sexual matters as these kids grow and progress. The other one is filming farm operations. I almost chuckle a little bit about this. You know, I've raised on a little farm out in West Weber County, and I've been around farms and animals, and I've owned animals, horses, my whole life. And I look at that, what's happening with some of these organizations, and literally they're trying to give rights to animals. And believe me, I think we should be kind to our animals. And compassionate, but good night. This has just gone beyond belief what they're trying to do now. And so I absolutely supported both those bills.
On the agriculture operations, it's interesting you provide a perspective here, having grown up with agriculture. Isn't there, though, at least a perception problem here? It just kind of looks like agriculture operations are trying to prevent reporting on mistreatment of animals.
Well, what we're trying to prevent is the tourism, I'm missing the word here. What we're trying to prevent is people going in and terrorizing. That's what I was trying to say, the terrorization of it. They're going on these people's property, and they're turning their animals loose. It was just a year or two ago that up in Morgan County, they turned a whole bunch of mink up there loose. Well, that's a person's livelihood. And really, it's kind of like domestic terrorism. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
Let's turn to Representative Litvak. Would you throw your support behind either of these petition drives?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think on the agriculture operations, one, Representative Mathis was actually great to work with on this. And the bill that came back from the Senate was a whole lot better than what we had sent over. And so, thank you to Senator Jenkins and the Senate for making, sometimes we joke as Democrats, our job is to make things less worse. And that definitely happened in the case of this bill. So it was cleaned up a lot better. While I may still have some fundamental issues with the philosophy behind it, I think the bill as it ultimately passed was much more narrow and targeted than it was initially written. However, where I continue to have concerns is it still does not contain whistleblower protection. I understand the idea of wanting to prevent someone from going on to these operations and releasing minks or taking video to use for propaganda, things like that. But there have been numerous incidents where employees on these farms have witnessed abuse, and they film that abuse, and then they take that to law enforcement. And that has led to recalls, that has led to criminal prosecutions. And in essence, what this bill does is it criminalizes that individual. It criminalizes that individual who may, out of no other reason than wanting to protect the public safety, videos or photographs the abuse. And that's where the problem, I feel, still exists with that bill. Regarding sex education, to us and to many, particularly in the public right now, go by the simple mantra, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Don't fix it. We had parents in control. We had parents in control because we had an opt-in. This was about parental rights and the ability to choose what is best for your child. And the legislature took that away from parents. And so we had a system that was abstinence-based, that really focused on the idea of not having sex before marriage. And we allowed parents the choice of whether their child should or should not take these classes. And that's the way it should be. And that's ultimately what we took away, is we took away a parent's right to choose. And that we consider that a problem. I mean, where I come from and the district that I represent, some of the highest STD rates, sexual transmitted disease rates in the state, and a very high teen pregnancy rate. This is a very real issue. This is has tremendous impact on people's lives. And I think we had the right balance, that we had it properly placed in parents' control, and the legislature took that away.
Let me just get to some final statements from each of you, starting with Representative Litvak on this one. Just overall, what you'd like to say about the legislative session that just passed?
Well, I think it was the hallmark was the civility. The hallmark was the ability of Democrats and Republicans working together and putting what was in the best interest of the state forward. Does that mean that we always agreed? No, absolutely not. But when we disagreed, we did it in a very respectful manner, in a very civil manner, and I think that does everyone justice and should be the way that – this should be the expectation that we have of all of our elected officials.
And Senator Jenkins.
I would agree with Representative Litvak. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations to him for 12 great years. He will be missed up there. He's a wonderful individual, and we absolutely love working with each other, and he's been a good friend to me while I've been there. So, David, you will be missed for me. As far as this session, I would agree. Civility was a big part of it. The fact that we continue to do good things that we've done all these years, that we balance budgets, and we don't let government grow at a fever pitch. We control things. We do good things in this state, and that's why we're the best-managed state in the nation. And, of course, our goal is to stay on number one, to keep doing good things.
Very good. We'll leave it there for this segment. We've been talking with Senator Scott Jenkins. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Representative David Litvak, thank you so
much.
Coming up, we're going to be talking with Judy Hillman from Utah Health Policy Project. Later in the program, Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center will join us, and we'll also be talking with Senators Pete Knudsen and Ross Romero. And all that coming up following a very brief break, we'll be bringing in Judy Hillman. Let's bring in Judy Hillman right now.
Hi there.
Judy Hillman, thanks for joining us.
Hey, yeah, good morning.
Appreciate you joining us. So we had you on some 45 days ago at the beginning of the session. Thought we'd check back in. And so first question, on the plus side, what are some good things from your point of view that happened during this session?
Well, they really took care of Medicaid, I would say, in the sense that we were looking to catch up on our caseload growth. It used to be historically they would underfund that every year, and then you're always kind of digging yourself out of this hole. And so it, you know, becomes really difficult to make any worthy investments that might be made in our Medicaid program. So they caught up more or less on the caseload growth and actually allowed they made some investments in what I'm going to call accountable care. And this is where we're moving our Medicaid program. We're changing incentives for our Medicaid program so that providers will be paid more if they help their patients get better, stay out of the emergency room, and really take charge of their health. So that's a 180-degree shift, or maybe not quite 180. But they made those necessary down payments so that we could move Medicaid in that direction. So we're relatively pleased as far as Medicaid goes. I can't say the same thing about the Health Care Compact, and if you like, we can go
yes,
over that.
I was going to ask you about that. That's been quite controversial. Mm-hmm. And remind us what that is.
Care Compact?
Yes.
Well, with the Health Care Compact, it's Senate Bill 208. It was sponsored by Senator Stuart Adams, and this was on the request of the Sutherland Institute. And I'm going to let Jason here in our shop describe what happened there.
Okay.
The Health Care Compact bill, which the basic purpose of it in a nutshell was to have Utah join other states in asking the federal government to give us all the federal funds that we get now for health care programs, but take away, cut all the strings, and let us administer those funds as we see fit. That would have to be approved by Congress, and the president would have to sign the bill. But if that happened, we calculated at UHPP that the loss in federal funds to Utah would be $350 million just in 2014.
Hmm.
And by 2020, we'd be talking about in excess of $8 billion less than we get under current law from the federal government for Medicare, Medicaid, and other health care programs.
Now, proponents, and of course we had you on the program when we debated this earlier in the session, proponents say we might even have cost savings. You're saying your numbers say that there'd be a big cost involved.
Well, you know, the issue is not whether we'd have costs or savings. The issue is what would be the net. We can have savings, and we probably would operate these programs more efficiently because Utah has a good track record in its health care systems. But we'd start out in the hole by that $350 million in 2014. So the savings would have to be calculated in relation to those losses. And we think the net loss, there would be a net loss and a substantial net loss. We can't possibly make up $350 million in those programs just by running them better. It's too much of a head start for being behind in federal funding.
Just to remind listeners, and we sometimes get Medicaid and Medicare mixed up, if the Health Care Compact came through, everything came to the states, the problem in your view would be the state taking over Medicare, right?
Well, that would be one of the problems because the state has never administered the Medicare program. The Medicaid program we do administer, and they're about the same size, but to a large extent, they're very different populations. And we have no assurance, and even the Sutherland Institute couldn't answer this question, we have no assurance that there is administrative funding for Medicare in this mix. So we might have to come up with $150 million or so to administer Medicare out of our own pockets.
Hmm.
And that seems to us to be a non-starter.
So, Yes, go ahead.
The process that this bill went through was one of the proponents laying out a general vision, but again, not being able to answer detailed questions which were put to them by various stakeholders. And the result of that is that the House, in its consideration of the bill, decided that those questions really need to be answered before Utah moves forward with the compact. The bill was passed. Utah is expressing its intention to join the compact, but under the terms of the final bill, the state has to reauthorize joining the compact in 2014. But probably most important from our standpoint is by 2013, the Health System Reform Task Force of Utah has to study a series of questions in relation to the compact and determine what the state's position is going to be when we enter into negotiations with these other states and enter into negotiations with the federal government to make this a reality. Some of those issues, for example, are the impact of the Supreme Court ruling on the Affordable Care Act. That's a complete unknown right now, and you can't possibly plan for that until after it happens. Second one is whether Utah is going to be required to implement any part of that act before negotiating the compact with the federal government, for example, the Medicaid expansions in 2014. The funding formula in the bill and the compact, which results in these kinds of losses of federal funds because it doesn't keep up with medical inflation, is another issue that has to be studied by the task force and reported back to the legislature on. And then there are issues around flexibility to implement state-based initiatives, or whether we find ourselves in a situation where we kind of have to march in lockstep with the likes of Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Georgia, who've already approved the compact. And our concern there is those states are so far behind Utah, if we've got to play ball with them, they're the only winners because they'd learn a lot from us, and we'd be the losers because we'd be spending our time doing that instead of fixing the Utah health system.
Jason Cook from the Utah Health Policy Project. Final question. I don't know if Judy wants to come on to field this, or if you'd like to.
Okay. Depends on the question.
Just a general question. There were some good things and bad things, as you saw it from the point of view of your organization. I wonder if there's anything left undone that you would have liked to have seen done at this session.
Well, I think we would have liked to see the Medicaid and CHIP funding be brought up to the full levels to cover all the caseloads. The funding was shortchanged again this year, which means we're going to have this conversation next year to fill the bucket, as it were, and then provide funding for the following year. We're also concerned that there, in an environment where we had millions of dollars in new revenues, there was an opportunity to invest in elements of the Medicaid program that can deliver better results, cost savings, as well as better care, things like making sure that people, adults, have access to eyeglasses. We want the adults that are involved in Medicaid to find their way, if they're not already in the workforce, back into the workforce, hopefully on their employer's insurance through the private market. But if they can't see, they can't even read the want ads to find a job. They can't go into workforce services and get training to become better at something so they can find a job. So things like eyeglasses, audiology, help with hearing aids, it's the same issue there, because if you can't hear, how are you going to expect to participate in a job interview? And then finally, we believe that dental services need to be restored for adults in Utah, and we recognize that that was a bigger ticket item, but we're going to continue to press for that in the next session.
Very good. We're talking with Jason Cook there with the Utah Health Policy Project. Previously, Judy Hillman was on with us, Utah Health Policy Project. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us. After a brief break, we're going to be talking with Republican Senator Peter Knudsen and with Democratic Senator Ross Romero. And at the end of the program, we'll be talking with Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center. It's our legislative wrap-up program, and you're welcome to join this conversation if you'd like at 1-800-826-1495 or an email to upraxcess@gmail.com. Brief break now.
Support for coverage of the Utah Legislature comes from USU's Department of Journalism and Communication, dedicated to free expression and mutual understanding in the information age, online at usu.edu/journalism.
Well, there were a couple of very controversial bills. They have petition drives urging the governor to veto them. That's the Agriculture Operations Bill and the Sex Education Bill. The session was also characterized by some legislation that did not pass. No immigration bills came out of this session. Grandma that took such a big bite out of last session didn't this time around. Air quality was debated. There are also some environmental boards that were realigned. And, of course, the big news in any session is the budget. And there was some new money this time around, which was allocated to education and some other purposes. We bring in now Senator Pete Knudsen and Senator Ross Romero. Senator Knudsen, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be invited.
We appreciate you joining us now 45 days after we had another similar program. Senator Ross Romero, thanks for joining us again as well.
Happy to be here.
So let me start with this with Senator Romero. How would you characterize this session, pluses, minuses?
I think, by and large, a lot of pluses. Obviously, focusing a lot on education serves the community well. I think that the budget, thankfully, did have surplus money, so we were able to spend more for needs that we had let that weren't met for the last few years. I also think that we were particularly engaged in the health conversation relative to cancers, relative to obesity, relative to breast screening. And so, you know, I think by and large, we were doing the people's work in a good way that will lend itself to good policy.
And Senator Knudsen, the same question. How would you characterize the session from your point of view?
Well, I thought it was a very good session from a lot of different perspectives. I think the fact that we were able to address some of the growing needs of the state that we've not been able to do for the last several years due to the downturn in the economy, I think the fact that we had $500 million in new ongoing and one-time dollars is a significant step forward. So that in and of itself would make this session very much better than what we've had in the last 3 or 4 years.
Senator Knudsen, speaking specifically about the budget,
yes.
Do you think the major areas and concerns that you felt should have been addressed were addressed?
Well, you know, I've been in the legislature now quite a number of years, and going into every session, we have expectations, but during the last few years, we haven't had the resources to have high expectations. We were very fortunate over the last several years to maintain pretty much a level playing field, but this year, we've been able to invest in some of the needs of the state where we've not been able to in the past, I would have to say was probably the highlight.
Senator Romero, I asked Representative Litvak about this. I'll ask you as well. The Democrats, unitedly at the beginning of the session, came out with the Best Schools Initiative. Some of that was passed. Do you think on balance that you got what you needed from that passed, or are you disappointed with some areas that did not get passed?
Well, obviously a little disappointed that our lowering class size from K through third grade wasn't funded and wasn't highlighted, and so you know we do have a small class size initiative. What the bill would have done is to make sure that we were spending the dollars for those efforts, and also build a vehicle to make sure that we keep those class size lower in the future. In those critical years of reading and writing and just the fundamentals. But, you know, we also did get some money for paraeducators. We did establish a very good conversation leading out the session on highlighting for those areas. So, again, you know, didn't get everything, but certainly we moved forward, and I think we're very engaged in the conversation.
Senator Knutson, I brought this up in the first half hour. I'll bring it up here as well. If last year was characterized by immigration and grandma, this year you could perhaps characterize by frustration for state lawmakers over federal intrusion as they see it in state sovereignty and so-called message bills. Do you agree in principle with these message bills?
Well, you know, there's varying degrees of frustration. Some of us are perhaps a little more philosophical than others, but message bills do serve a purpose, and that is to let the folks in Washington know what the folks in Utah expect of them and what our expectations are relative to government and its various programs.
And Senator Romero, what's your view?
Well, I think we spent a great deal of time discussing bills, supporting the state sovereignty, and that's important, but obviously when we're passing bills that have constitutional notes or concerns and we're inviting engagement in the courts with the federal government, I think that our dollars and time are better served elsewhere.
Let me also bring up in this half what I brought up last half as well, the couple of bills that are controversial enough that they have petition drives urging the governor to veto them. Begin with the agricultural operations bill. Senator Knutson, do you support this?
Well, when I first heard of the bill itself, I had some reservations. But as I saw it progress through the legislature, there were changes made. And I felt that the bill itself had merit. As far as efforts to have the governor veto that piece of legislation or others is not a new, unique process. I mean, that's part of the process for the public to be engaged. If they're not happy about any given effort in terms of legislation, they have the right to lobby the legislature, and if that doesn't work, they have the right to work through the governor's office to make changes. And that's a wholesome, open, healthy process.
What about the sex education bill? You generally support that?
Are you asking me, did I support it?
Yes.
No, I voted against it.
Okay. Would you support a petition drive to the governor on that?
Well, you know, I respect the people who have placed a large effort on abstinence only. In an ideal world, that's probably a good thing. But we don't live in an ideal world, and we have to have, I think, our eyes focused on what we can do to make sure that our children are well informed of the consequences of their actions. And so, as far as supporting a drive to override it, I think it would be better to try to work with the legislature to try to improve our program that we now have.
Senator Romero, do you support either or both of these petition drives?
Yeah, I support both. I do think the agriculture bill came a good way, but I am still worried about the implications and the unintended gotcha that could occur to Utah's residents. And I think Pete said it really well on the sex ed bill. At the end of the day, you know, this was about parents' choice to opt in to information provided their kids in schools. And we trust our teachers and educators with our most important family members, our children, and they do a wonderful job helping educate them. And certainly maturation is part of the education everyone goes through, and it's important to have information that's been vetted and reviewed, and there's uniformity. But again, it's only if the parent wishes for that information to be conveyed. So I am particularly frustrated that this was on our radar when it seemed so obvious that it was working well.
Let me give each of you just a last word, your final comments on the legislative session, starting with Senator Knutson.
Well, I would say that it's one of the better sessions I've been involved with over the past several years. I think there was a very good, amicable working relationship between the minority and majority parties in the Senate. I can't speak for what occurred in the House, but I've never seen a better working relationship than what we've had this year. I have to say that those of us in the majority party have great respect for our good friends in the minority party. They're not only good legislators, and they represent their constituencies well. They're good friends. We like them. They're good people.
Senator Merrill, your final words.
Well, let me also thank my majority colleagues, and Pete's among the best in the body. He's got great service and just a good heart. The other thing I hope the public knows is how hard legislators work. Sometimes there's a perception that people are up there not with pure heart and not with good intentions. And I can tell you the folks that are working on behalf of the citizens really do put in long hours, and they care about what they're doing. This is a bit melancholy for me in a way. My last legislative session, I'm on to other pursuits, but it's been an honor to serve, and hope I've lent a voice to again make sure the Democratic views as the Democratic leader were heard.
Well, good luck in those future pursuits, Senator. We appreciate you having you on. Senator Ross Romero, thanks so much. And Senator Pete Knudsen, thanks so much to you.
Thank you.
Now we bring in a brief conversation with Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center. Glenn Bailey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And we talked with you about 45 days ago to preview the session. Just have a couple of minutes here. I just wanted to get your brief take on pros and cons from the legislative session.
Well, from a perspective of issues that affect low-income people, the budget held up pretty good. There were a couple of things that happened that we were concerned about, like the merging of the state housing division with the Department of Workforce Services, which did pass, and we think that has the possibility of really weakening affordable housing programs. There was another bill, HB 101, that provides tax credits to employers hiring the homeless. And this was the first year it was run, and it got all the way through the House and to the Senate. It wasn't funded, so we'll try and support that when it comes back in a future session, but that was optimistic. On payday lending, which we'd like to see better regulated, the best bills were defeated, and really no progress was made there. So overall, it could have been worse. There's some things that that it would have been really helpful to see pass this session, and there's some things that have the potential to be really bad, like Senate Bill 208, the Health Care Compact bill, which, depending on how things play out, has the potential to put Utah in charge of Medicare and Medicaid with vastly reduced resources, and that would be a bad thing for seniors and low-income people. But that's years to see how that really impacts people. There won't be any immediate impact. So it could have been worse, and that's basically where we're at.
Very good. Out of time, of course, that health care compact and some others you'll be keeping an eye on. We will as well. We'll be checking back in with Glenn Bailey, Crossroads Urban Center, as we go along. Thanks so much for joining us today. And thanks for listening to Access Utah Today, our legislative wrap-up program, and I hope you've enjoyed and found useful the coverage that we've given you all the way through the session, not only in Access Utah, but during our news coverage. By the way, some of these issues will continue on Access Utah on Wednesday. We're working on a program to debate this agricultural operations bill. It's been quite controversial. And on Tuesday, we're going to have a program on Utah's political caucuses and why more people should participate. Many people are urging more people to participate in caucuses. We'll find out how it all works on Tuesday. Those are upcoming programs. Thanks for joining us today on Access Utah.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu. Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.